Blog Talk Radio.
And we are live on Fan for Racing, NASCAR and Race Talk. This is Monday night, March the 6th. And once again, we have an interesting show lined up for our listeners tonight. Now, Sal is hopefully going to be able to join me sometime during our show tonight, but there is a possibility that he may not make it. So just a heads up there. Also, if you listened last week, you heard that I was having some bronchial issues, upper respiratory issues. I'm still having some of those issues. I'm going to try to do the best I can tonight, but being short on breath is one of the issues that I'm having. So please bear with me as we work through the show tonight. Now then, as for our agenda for tonight, we do have post-race audio from Atlanta Motor Speedway. I actually have all three winners available tonight. So what I'm going to do is start with Kyle Busch and Scott Graves and their post-race comments after winning the Xfinity Series race. Now, there are some issues with that win, and we'll find out more this week about what's going to happen with that. Kyle Busch failed the post-race inspection. He suggested that maybe it was an air pressure issue with the tires in part of the post-race comments. But, again, we're going to hear from NASCAR sometime this week as far as whether or not they're going to take any action on the fact that Kyle Busch and his team failed that post-race inspection. So we're going to start with that. And then I will also play some of the audio from Christopher Bell, Kyle Busch as the team owner, and Rudy Fugel, the crew chief, after that. So, and Christopher Bell, of course, won the Camping World Truck Series race on Saturday after that Xfinity Series race. Now, depending on how my voice holds up and how we progress through the night, I think during our 9:30 half hour, we'll play the Brad Keselowski post-race comments so that everybody will be able to listen to that. At 9 o'clock, though, we have a live guest, a returning guest to Fan for Racing, Ben Rhodes from Thorth Sport Racing. I think is off to a really great start in his second season in the Camping World Truck Series. So we'll talk to him about that. He finished 12th at Daytona and followed that up with a fourth-place finish at Atlanta. He's got a new crew chief with Eddie Terconis, and we'll talk to him about how that relationship is firming up. Obviously, it seems like it's working pretty well. But we'll talk to Ben Rhodes about that during that 9 o'clock half hour. And like I say, hopefully Sal will be able to join us, but there is the possibility that he won't. So we'll kind of be on the lookout for him, and hopefully my voice will hold out here. Now, there's been a lot going on. We talked about the three winners, Kyle Busch winning the Xfinity Series race, Christopher Bell won the Camping World Truck Series race, and then, of course, Brad Keselowski won the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series race. Now, Kevin Harvick dominated that race, and I thought, sure, he was going to end up being the winner. And, you know, I think what it came down to is, Brad Keselowski made mistakes, too. They had loose lug nuts and had some problems with that. But it happened early in the race, and they were able to – they had time, plenty of time, to overcome that. In Kevin Harvick's case, He had a pit road speeding penalty that happened very late in the race, and although he was able to recover, quite a bit, it wasn't enough time for him to recover to get back into the lead. One of the things that I think is so great about the stage racing that NASCAR is doing right now is for a driver like Kevin Harvick, he gained points by winning that stage one. He gained points by winning stage two. And even though there was a mistake that was made in the third stage of the race and he didn't end up winning, he didn't lose that much ground. So the stage racing still has rewarded his performance in the first three quarters of that race. So, excuse me, it's really good that he was able to get those points. And it wasn't just Kevin Harvick. You know, in those first two stages, the top 10 drivers gain extra points, bonus points, for finishing in that top 10. Now, it was also fun watching the end of the race between Kyle Larson and Brad Keselowski. A lot of us thought Kyle Larson was going to end up winning that race. And when he took the high side, I know some people questioned it, but if you look at it in the context of how he was running throughout most of that race, the high line was working for Kyle Larson. And so it makes sense that he would have chosen the high line for that restart. It just so happened that in that particular restart, it didn't work out for him as well as it had earlier in the race. Brad Keselowski was able to pick up the lead and ended up winning that race, a race that he never thought that he was going to win. I think most of the drivers racing that race thought Kevin Harvick was going to win that race. So I think someone referred to it as a bit of a Christmas gift, and it really was, because Kevin Harvick had that race won for all intent purposes, had it not been for the pit road speeding penalty late in the race. So just some conversation about that Monster Energy Cup race as we open up the show tonight. I thought it was good to see Christopher Bell come home with the win in the Camping World Truck Series. And, you know, he's part of the Kyle Busch Motorsports organization. He's working with Rudy Fugel this year. And we will listen to a few of those comments a little bit later in this half hour. Since Sal's not here, I think I'm going to start a little bit early with playing the post-race comments from Kyle Busch and his crew chief, Scott Graves. So I'm going to go ahead and get started with that now. I'll try to replenish my voice in the meantime, and we'll move on from there. Okay, let's take a listen.
We're now joined by our race-winning team with Kyle Busch and crew chief Scott Graves. We're going to open the floor directly to questions so Kyle can get to the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series race.
Kyle, you didn't dominate the race. I know you referenced that in your TV interview, but the dynamic, because you and Scott Graves have never worked together, but the dynamic seemed to work all day long, just listening to you two go back and forth on the radio. Maybe both of you give a little insight into this, but how crucial was that relationship and just keeping digging at this race car to be able to get it on the last run for you today?
Yeah, I mean, you obviously have to keep working and keep communicating and, you know, trying to make your race car better. And I was hoping I was saying the right things in order to make sure that we could work on it in the right way and get the car better each and every time. And I felt like we did that. You know, Scott made some good calls on being able to get me the grip that I was looking for, whether it was rear, whether it was front. We kind of seemed to teeter-totter a little bit there today on that razor's edge of whether you had too much front or too much rear. So, you know, we obviously haven't worked together a whole lot, so we're still trying to build on all those things. And my tone over the radio about how loose I am and stuff like that and the adjustments that he was making was right on cue, so it felt good.
Additional questions for Kyle? Go to Stan.
Kyle, I know you can't reveal what you learned, if you learned anything, but do you feel more comfortable after this race with going into tomorrow's event?
A little bit. It's kind of a refresher course, if you will, each and every year to run on Saturday to kind of get ready for what you need to know for Sunday. So it felt good to get out there, and I did learn a couple things that kind of I might have forgotten about and didn't have in my notes that helped me out today. So hopefully I can use those things in my cup car. I wasn't using them earlier today in practice, but they can help me get the lines that I need to run a little bit better and keep the car underneath me more and get ourselves a good finish tomorrow.
Kyle, go head off to the NASCAR right, Camping World Truck Series race, and good luck. We're here with Crew Chief Scott Graves with the number 18 NOS Energy Drink Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing. Scott, how was it like setting up this car with this new aero package, a lot of new variables going into the mile and a half that you have to prepare for this year? What was that like getting ready for this race?
I know we were all a little bit anxious to get out here and see what it was going to be like. Obviously, with practice being the first time we'd seen this package for us the other day. A lot of hours spent in the off season thinking about it, working through some different scenarios. If it's going to be this, then we need to work on this direction. So we had a lot of things planned out. Luckily, when we started off, it actually wasn't too far off. So engineers on the team, everyone at Joe Gibbs Racing, all the guys worked really hard to get it that way. So really fortunate the way we started off.
Okay, we'll open the floor for questions. We will go back over here to Jacob.
Scott, Jacob Seelman, Performance Motorsports Network. Kyle was talking about how you two communicated during the day, but you're coming off championship at Roush Fenway in 2015 with Chris Buescher, championship last year at JGR with Suarez, and now you get the best guy that's ever been in an Xfinity car. What are the differences? How has working with Kyle so far been different compared to the young guys that you've had the past couple years with Chris and with Daniel, having to coach them through the year and ultimately getting them championships?
Yeah, it's just the experience level. I mean, obviously he can guide you a lot more throughout practice. The younger guys, it's more of a mentoring. You spend a lot of time talking about, here the car's here. We think this is what it's going to do during the race and how we need to have it feel at the end of practice. And Kyle obviously has a lot of that built in when he comes into it. He knows what he wants. So from that point, it's a big help, really. And I can take some of my ideas and we try them, and then he'll have ideas and we'll try them. So it's definitely a lot different from what I've had, but really looking forward to more races.
Go right here in the middle. Right here in the middle.
Michael Guzman, Motorsports Tribune. What are you with the addition of the 41 and the 00, both Ford teams? Are you noticing anything different about their performance out of the gate this year as compared to last year in 2016?
Yeah, obviously it was a lot closer. The whole field, we noticed that throughout the weekend. The 41, I mean, obviously parts of the race had the dominant car by far. So it's the competition I expect to be a lot tighter this year, especially the rules package, everyone getting started on that. I think it's gonna tighten up those top cars.
Any additional questions? Scott, congratulations on the win, and good luck next week in Vegas.
All right, thank you.
All right. That was the post-race audio after Kyle Busch, along with his crew chief, Scott Graves, won the Xfinity Series race at Atlanta Motor Speedway on Saturday afternoon. Again, just a reminder, they did fail the post-race inspection. NASCAR is taking a look at that, and they will be addressing whether or not they'll be taking any other actions in regard to failing the post-race inspection sometime this week. So definitely look for that information to be forthcoming. Now, I also have here the post-race audio from Christopher Bell's win in the Camping World Truck Series later the same day. This audio includes Christopher Bell, the team owner Kyle Busch, and the crew chief Rudy Fugel. Now, the segment is 17 minutes long. We're not going to be able to listen to all 17 minutes because we do have a guest coming on at 9 p.m. with Ben Rhodes from ThorSport Racing. So I will play some of it, but just know that I will be cutting that off at some point to prepare for our next guest. Okay, so with that, here is some post-race audio from Christopher Bell's win in the Camping World Truck Series.
If I could have your attention here in the media center, we are now joined by our race-winning team for the ninth running of the Active Pest Control 200 in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series, joined by race-winning driver Christopher Bell, driver of the number 4 JBL Toyota. For Kyle Busch Motorsports, we have crew chief Rudy Fugel and team owner Kyle Busch. Christopher, boy, after the way you finished this race last year, this has to feel, you know, it's good to get in the victory lane, but to have that kind of redemption coming through. Talk about the thoughts going through your mind right now that you have this win under your belt here at Atlanta Motor Speedway.
Well, this was definitely a race I had circled ever since we left here last February, but to be able to be so good here last year and then to come back and be as dominant as what we were was really cool for me. And it was just kind of a dream weekend ever since we unloaded. We were really, really fast right off the truck, and everything we did to it just made it better and better and better throughout practice. As soon as they dropped the green in the race, it was just really, really good. And then kind of got shuffled there on the restart and got stalled out back there in fifth or sixth. But whenever we were able to restart back on the bottom, we were able to get right back up there.
Rudy, how confident were you and your driver on that final restart that he was going to be able to hold him off?
Yeah, no, I was definitely, he'd shown that he knew what to do all day long, just as long as he was in the right lane. You know, it was a top lane is treacherous, so he got a little scared there. We got stuck back in traffic that we weren't going to get the enough laps on our tires or get the right restart lane, but it all worked out, so he did a great job.
And Kyle, you've had a great talent of spotting talent, and you know, Christopher is no exception. Talk about the talent that he's really bringing to the table and what is really making him a success in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just is a true testament to everybody at KBM that does such a great job building fast trucks. You know, I think that that's the first opportunity you got to give these younger drivers, and then from there they have to have the know-with-all to be able to go out there and succeed in that equipment. And we saw it last year. You know, Christopher's now won 3 years in a row in the Truck Series, which is really cool. And, you know, we saw it last year with William being successful and being able to move on. Christopher now kind of taking the reins of KBM and being the elder statesman here and the experienced guy and being able to kind of be our lead dog for the championship. So certainly it's been really fun to watch him and to see him progress from last year into this year, and to see the calmness and everything, even how crazy Daytona was, to see how he came out of that, and then to come here and have the focus to just go out there and be fast right off the truck and do all the right things in the race. You know, there was never going to be a chance I was going to catch him, so it certainly looked good from my vantage point to watch a KBM truck out in front of me while I was running second.
Okay, we're going to open up the floor for questions. If you have a question, we'll get a wireless microphone to you. We'll start with our left with Jacob.
Jacob Seelman, Performance Motorsports Network. I'll start with you, Chris. As far as your day goes, I mean, you said it, this was about as perfect as you could ask for. What was different about this truck compared to the truck that you almost won with a year ago? Because that truck was good, but this truck, it seemed like you went home, worked on it, and came back with a playbook that was even better than you had last year.
Well, I guess the biggest thing was the right front stayed together this time. But I was really good last year, and I feel like I was even better this year. So I guess a year of experience helps. I feel like making the switch to Rudy was really helpful as well. So to be able to come here back-to-back years and run really well, it definitely puts this track up there on my favorites list.
And Kyle, Matt was talking about you've had this penchant for spotting talent. You did it with Eric. You did it with Christopher. But last year going into the season, I don't think any of us necessarily had him as the KBM driver to make it to the Final Four. Obviously, circumstances took Byron kind of out of play there. But he grew so much over the year. What have you seen in him kind of blossom over the course of this that's turned him into really one of the elite drivers in this series now?
Christopher? Right?
Yeah.
We're still working on it. We're still trying to get the sprint car out of him.
I don't know if that'll ever happen.
That's the biggest thing. You know, this kid grows up racing 30-lap features here or there or wherever, and you know, after 30 laps, the right rear's gone. So that's been our problem, is after 30 laps, the tires are gone, you know. So we've gotten a little Days of Thunder mentality going on here with him that we've just had to work on over the course of the last year, and he learned a lot. I feel like second half of last year for sure, of being able to just get into the rhythm of these races and run these races as they come to him, and allowing the competition and our equipment to be able to get him up front. You know, there's a lot of different guys that you got to race different ways. I think he's learned that a lot as well, too. You know, Crafton's one of the best, obviously. He was able to outrun him today. He outran me through much of the day as well. So certainly he knows how to get it done when it comes down to being able to make fast lap time and being able to do it for a long time. Here at Atlanta is one of the hardest places to do it for a long run. And, man, he could do it for the whole time. So it was really impressive to watch.
We're going to go next to my left to Kyle, then to Bob, and then to Mr. Ridgeway here, and then to Jeff.
Kyle Magda, the RacingExperts.com. This one's for Kyle. Was there any indication of the tire going down on that one restart?
No, I certainly would have wished that there was. You know, I was scrubbing my tires and everything felt normal. You know, I did kind of feel as though it was a little lazier than it had been in the past, but I was on the outside again, and I thought I was just running through a bunch of debris and the rubber that was down and picking it up on my tires. So I didn't think anything of it. But, you know, got down into turn one, and there was no air in the tire. So that seems to happen to me a lot.
Did you feel any gratification when you when Chris spun the tires on that one restart, and then earlier in the Xfinity race when Byron did the same thing at the start?
Man, the outside, like Rudy said, it's just treacherous. It's just really bad on the outside. I don't know why or what's going on with that. It's just weird that the inside could have such good bite and the outside doesn't. You know, I was on the outside a few times today, and I was horrible. You know, I'd spin my tires past the start-finish line if I could. You know, I just could never get them to catch back up. And by the time you think you're right about the point where your tires are going to catch back up with the speed that you have, somebody pounds you from behind, and then they're spinning again, you know. So it just seems like it would really never end for me. But I had maybe one good restart on the outside. I was on the outside of Christopher for a restart, and I maintained with him better than I had. I only fell to third instead of, like, sixth or seventh. So, you know, that was about the best one that I had all day on the outside.
Go next to Bob.
All right, I got two. First for Christopher, what, how important you feel like it was for you to get a win early this season?
So I definitely think it's really important, especially after looking back at last year. I was able to start off at Daytona really fast and race, took the white flag and in position to win the race, and then to come here and lead the race with seven to go, and then have two DNFs back-to-back. Went to Martinsville and struggled there, and in the meantime, the nine group was kind of hitting their stride at that point, and you could totally see the momentum change throughout the course of the season. So starting off with good momentum and good results is huge for us, and being able to be locked into the chase is great as well.
And for Kyle, I assume you heard your car, your Xfinity car was too low in the front.
Oh, fantastic. No, thanks. Appreciate that, Bob. Sorry. The bearer of bad news. Always.
Sorry, I guess anyway, no.
What else?
I was curious if you felt like did anything break or any reason why it might have been too low. And then is that car running for the owner's championship? So would you guys be able to overcome any penalty associated with it?
Well, maybe they should have checked the air pressure in the front tires first. Maybe that's why it was low. I don't know. I didn't feel anything happen or anything over the course of the day. I don't remember what kind of adjustments we were making. I know we were going track bar down and wedge out, so that should have actually kind of lifted the front a little bit maybe, but I don't know how low it was or anything like that. I haven't heard anything. So I don't even know what the penalty is now. Shit changes so fast. Cool. Yeah, it's supposed to be going the whole season, so I guess I'll have to figure out who I'm working with next week. 10-4.
Coming up front.
Rudy, you available?
It's for Christopher. Todd Ridgeway at Area Auto Racing News. Christopher, you got 4 weeks till Martinsville, and then 4 weeks after that before you really start the stride of the season with your truck. What's your plans for the weeks in between?
Go race. So I've got a couple midget races scheduled in March, and then after Martinsville, I think I'm going to try and do a couple sprint car races. USAC? Yeah, we're going to do the USAC midget race at Des Moines, Illinois, and then Power Eye Midgets at Oklahoma City the following weekend.
We're going to go next to Jeff and then over to Chris.
Jeff Gluck from jeffgluck.com. This is for Kyle. You mentioned a couple times in your post-race interview about wanting to go 10 for 10 this year. I know, you know, people said, oh, it's the Kyle Busch rule when it happened last year, but am I wrong in picking up that you're taking it a little bit personally this year and that you have an extra chip on your shoulder to go win every one of the races that you're in?
I mean, certainly we want to win every single one of them that we're in. I wouldn't say there's an extra chip on my shoulder about it. It's just that I didn't even expect for us to win today. You know, it looked like there for a while it was going to be Harvick. And then it looked like there without the last couple cautions that came out, it was going to be Larson. Then it kind of got into our hands there at the end coming off pit road first. And then, you know, the truck race today, again, it kind of started to fall into my hands when Christopher got shuffled back a little bit there. And then if the race would have went green to the end, you know, we probably would have been in victory lane. But we had an opportunity to come back down and put tires on it and restart again. And we lost our track position, but it didn't even matter that we lost our track position because we didn't have air in our tires. So, you know, we had a flat and just had to mosey on home. So I'm just out there to win anyone that I can get in anyways. So it's not necessarily to put added pressure on it. But it'd certainly be nice to do it just to kind of give old thumbs up to everybody. Yeah, that's it.
Okay, those were post-race comments from Christopher Bell, team owner Kyle Busch, and Rudy Fugel. Now, there was some carryover in the case of Kyle Busch from his Xfinity Series win earlier in the day. He had to kind of rush away from the media center post-race conference because he was also racing in the Camping World Truck Series. So there were some additional questions there. Something for fans to be aware of with regard to both of those interviews. Excuse me. Now, coming up at our 9 o'clock half hour is going to be Ben Rhodes. Ben Rhodes also raced in the Camping World Truck Series race on Saturday. And I just have to say, I think that they're off to a really good start this season. He finished 12th at Daytona on a super speedway racetrack. And then he followed that up with a fourth place finish with Thor Sport Racing in his number 27 truck on Saturday at Atlanta. And right now, I believe he's third in the series point standings. So Ben Rhodes is really off to a great start, I think, in the Camping World Truck Series this season. It's his second full season, not only in the Camping World Truck Series, but it's his second full season in the series as well with Thor Sport Racing. So we'll talk to him a little bit about this being his second season. Of course, one of the advantages is that he is able to he's able to kind of come back and to tracks that he's raced at before. The difference, though, I think this season is that Ben has a new crew chief. Last year, Eddie Traconis was the crew chief with Cameron Haley in the number 13 truck for Thor Sport Racing. And Cameron did not return this season. We're still hoping that he can get a ride and we'll see him on the racetrack at some point during the season. But that meant that Eddie Traconis moved over with Ben Rhodes. And so they're developing a new relationship in this second season for Ben and with Thor Sport Racing. And obviously it seems like it's going pretty well, pretty quickly for those two, the crew chief and driver. So, again, we'll talk with Ben when he comes on a little bit more about that. But that's one of the big differences between last year and this year. Now, Ben did have a top 10 finish last year, but in his second start at Atlanta Motor Speedway this year, he came home with that fourth place finish. And in his post-race comments, he indicated that he felt like he had a truck that could contend for the win had he had a few more laps to kind of go after that. So with that, I believe our guest is here now. So I'm going to go ahead and get started with the interview. Returning back to Fan for Racing Radio as one of our regular guests is Ben Rhodes with ThorSport Racing. And, Ben, you've got to feel really good about the start to your season with a 12th-place finish at Daytona, followed up with a 4th-place finish at Atlanta.
Absolutely. Our 27 Toyota Tundra with SafeLight involved this year has been rolling ever since the season started at Daytona. We had a great finish for SafeLight. It was my first race for them at Daytona. You know, for a 12th, considering where we were running at, we were actually leading the last lap until we got wrecked on the last lap in turn two. But we were still able to bring home the 12th place finish. The new stage format, segment format in NASCAR has allowed us to actually stay 4th place in points after Daytona. We went to Atlanta, competed for a win there as well, and ended up 4th place again. But with points, now I think we're 2nd or 3rd in points. I haven't really looked it over a whole lot. We're actually,
third.
I'm on my way up to Ohio right now, and we're having a meeting tomorrow about all of it.
Okay, you are 3rd in points, Ben, in the Camping World Truck Series. So not bad. You're actually tied with Johnny Sauter, your teammate, at 86 points for 2nd place. So that's not a bad start.
No, not at all. And, you know, this is exactly what we need to get the season going right, get the momentum on our side, and to give SafeLight a good showing, give everybody at ThorSport a good showing, considering all the hard work they've been putting into it. You know, after the fire at the shop last year, they've been working so hard, and we finally have it all repaired, replaced, and better than ever. They actually just got done painting some of the floors this morning just to even improve on the shop after it was already rebuilt. So there's a lot of pride at ThorSport and a lot of hard work going on to put these fast Tundras up front, and hopefully I can put one in Victory Lane for them here soon.
Well, it certainly sounds like that's a possibility. And you're right, you guys have had to overcome so much more than most of the other teams that are competing with the fire that took place at ThorSport Racing last season. And it seemed like you guys made it look pretty seamless last year, and it certainly looks seamless as you're coming into this season. Now, one of the other changes that took place for you, Ben, is you have a different crew chief this season. You're working with Eddie Terkonas, who was working with Cameron Haley last year, one of your ThorSport Racing teammates. Talk a little bit about how that relationship is developing.
Absolutely. Eddie Terkonas is an awesome crew chief, just a great leader. And, you know, I've had a lot of fun with him just getting to know him this season. I'm really amazed at how well we've been hitting it off. Last season he worked with Cameron Haley, and while we were teammates, you know, he was probably the closest crew chief I was, or the closest friend I had in the shop as far as crew chiefs go. So it was really cool that we're able to work together. But as far as changes go from last year, this is the biggest change has been crew chief and crew. Everything is brand new. All the trucks are brand new, as can be expected going into a new season. But our crew is all new. The crew chief is all new to me. Everything has been changed for my team, for me, from last year. That can be changed and still have the ThorSport Racing name on the truck.
Okay. Well, that's a challenge as well. But it's, again, you're making it look very seamless. Now, with regard to, you know, this being your 2nd season, not only in the Camping World Truck Series, but with ThorSport Racing, what are the things that you're taking away from your first season that you can bring into this season that are already helping you or will help you?
Well, I think the big thing that I've noticed already is just not being a rookie anymore. You can be so relaxed now that you've been to all the tracks. Now that I've gone to all the tracks, I know what's expected, and I know how to get to the racetrack and how to get into the racetrack. All the little things that you really don't think about that drivers have to worry about just getting into the racetrack and finding out where you're going, I'm on cruise control now, and it's so relaxing to be able to do that. So I feel better about the season. I'm more confident now than ever, and I just feel more comfortable in the car than ever. So that's all really good. But I think one of the biggest things is overall how we set up the race trucks. I learned how not to set up a race truck last year. I learned how to be fast in a Tundra, and I think we finally figured out what the secret formula is to be fast.
Okay, well, that's a good formula to know. Now, if you're thinking about the upcoming season, you're starting out here with Daytona, you go to Atlanta, and then you have this break until April 1st when you go to Martinsville. What are you doing during this break time to kind of keep your momentum going, because you have such great momentum right now?
Exactly. Yeah, that's one of the hardest things about the Truck Street schedule is the break in the beginning of the season, but it can be a blessing, and that's what we want to make it out to be, is take everything we learned from the first two races and build on that, learn from it, and build our new trucks to take what we learned and build that speed into the trucks for the next few races. So I'm actually on my way up to Sandusky right now. I'm going to be pulling up to my hotel here in about 10 minutes or so. Then we're going to be in the shop all day tomorrow, and we're going to be watching film. We're going to be learning as a team. We're going to have team meetings, team lunch. We're going to be setting up our trucks for Martinsville. We're going to do everything and anything that we can to keep building on the momentum and keep the communication alive, and just build the team up as a whole. You know, since these guys are new to me and I'm new to them, any amount of time that I can spend with them is going to be positive and just make our relationship that much better, and I think translate to speed throughout the season.
Okay, now you alluded to this a little bit earlier when you talked about the stage racing. I've got a little bit of a bronchial condition, so I get a little short of breath occasionally, so I apologize for that. I'm going on my second week here. Hopefully I'll get over it. But Ben, I just want to ask you about the stage racing, and what are your thoughts about this way of racing and the change that NASCAR made over this off season into this season?
Well, you're probably asking one of the biggest supporters of the stage racing right now, because after Daytona, leading, you know, finishing third in the first stage, sixth in the second stage, and then getting wrecked and finishing 12th on the last segment for the race, and leaving the track in fourth in points. I mean, that's huge. It rewards your efforts, and I think it really marries up well with the playoff system that NASCAR has. You know, if they were gonna, when they implemented this new playoff system, they definitely need to take a look at the point system, and I think this is a perfect marriage, and I'm really happy that they're able to do this, because like I said, you're asking one of the biggest supporters simply for the fact that it's benefited us already.
Absolutely, it has. And I think about even Kevin Harvick, who pretty much dominated the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup race. He won the first two segments but ran into a glitch with that pit road speeding penalty at the end. But the fact that he was able to gain points in those first two stages, I don't think hurt him that much.
No, and I think that's probably a nice consolidation for him, considering how much he led, how strong a performance he had, and how strong of a performance he had, and what he was able to accomplish, and not even really. So I'm sure he likes that now. I'm sure if he wasn't a supporter before, I'm sure he's a supporter now.
Absolutely, but you bring up some really great points with that. Now, excuse me again. Let's take another look at your upcoming season. Are there any tracks that you've kind of circled on the calendar this year that you're looking at and saying to yourself, I can't wait till we get back there because I want to do this?
Well, Kansas is definitely a big one for me. You know, that's where I thought we could have had a big win for us last year. We were definitely close, passing in the last corner, last lap, where we ran into that incident with Johnny Sauter. So I'm really excited for that one. That's also going to be the first race that I'll be hanging out with the Safelite people from the West Coast. And then also Kentucky Speedway. They're bringing 270 people out to the track. That's my home track. I really enjoy it every year because that's the only place you can sleep in your own bed and actually go race. That's Charlotte for the other people, but it's Kentucky for me.
Oh, well, that's fantastic. And hopefully we can have you on the show either before or after that Kentucky race, because I really like talking to you when you're going in front of your hometown crowd with everybody. So I think those are two great tracks for you to look forward to. Are you feeling really comfortable on the 1.5-mile tracks, Ben?
I am now. I'm getting there. I'm getting a lot better at it. I think, you know, running places like Talladega and Daytona really help get you up to speed. And I feel like now more than ever, just being comfortable in the trucks compared to last year, I think has boosted my performance. And I just enjoyed having a new team that has a fresh outlook on things, because they've been able to kind of come up with creative solutions for handling issues at these racetracks, these 1.5-mile tracks, which historically haven't been my best racetrack, but we're turning that around now, as you can see at Atlanta.
Right, right. I also wanted to make sure we talk about your sponsors, because you have some great sponsors. You've mentioned Safe Flight. You're going to be seeing them when you go out to Kansas this season. But you also have Alpha Energy Solutions, and that's with your dad. I know he's been obviously a huge supporter of yours. And talk about the relationship there, Ben.
Yeah, absolutely. I really enjoy having Alpha Energy Solutions on board our truck this year. They're only going to be on there for associate sponsor throughout the season, but you know, it's really nice to have that support from our community, my family, everybody that's involved. It's a cool way to still be in touch with my hometown, even though I'm touring around the country and going to so many different states. It's a way that kind of brings our community in Louisville somebody to watch to, and I think gives it an even greater tie-in into our city.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you also do On the Track every week, which I think is such a great thing that you do, because it's another way that you bring in other community members.
Yeah, actually, you know, the funny thing is we did that all last year. We've done it for 4 years now, and with how busy the season's been this year, we've had to postpone it for now, and we're not sure when we're going to refire it back up. I know it's disappointing. We're not sure when we're going to fire it back up, but I want to soon. We're thinking of going out into the community and just getting involved with some friends and some of the big supporters and leaders in our community and doing the same thing, maybe saving those for later shows. But right now, we don't have any plans to fire it back up yet, just because of how busy the season's been. This
right.
is my first year that I'm making trips up to Sandusky pretty much every week, which is about a 5.5 to 6 hour car ride one way up to the team. So
wow.
I'm doing a lot of road time, a lot of road time.
Well, that it sure sounds like it, Ben. Okay, so let's go into talking about who else do you want to shout out that has been big supporters of yours at Thor Sport Racing?
Well, the big thing is just Duke and Rhonda Thorson for you know, opening me with open arms and just kind of giving me this chance to race up there. They're awesome race team. They've been around for so long. They're the longest running truck team in NASCAR. They've been there since the very start. So the history that they have, the experience that they have is pretty incredible. And I just feel fortunate to be able to race there. But, you know, there's so many new changes that have been going on at the shop. They're really evolving and becoming we already know they're a top-notch race team. They've got two championships under their belt, multiple wins. But I think they're really evolving well into this four-car team that they are. And I think they've evolved into the role very nicely. And you're going to see some really strong performances from everybody, not just me or Matt Crafton or Grant Enfinger, Cody Coughlin, you know, not just from one of us, but from everybody throughout the team. I think you're going to see really strong performances from them this year.
Well, I think so, too. I think you've got some great teammates. When you think about the veterans like Matt Crafton and Johnny Sauter, you couldn't have any stronger veterans in your corner there at Thor Sport Racing. But you've got some real strong drivers that are coming up through the system here, too, with Cody Coughlin and Grant Enfinger, who's an ARCA Racing Series champion. Talk about your relationship with your peers.
Absolutely. Grant Enfinger is the first one that comes to mind, just because I was on the phone with him not too long ago. We talk about every race. We debrief after practice, every practice session, and we talk after every single race. And I think it's pretty cool that we're able to have that relationship, considering we've never worked together before. I've only raced against him a couple times before this year, and we've just hit it off so well. As well as Cody Coughlin, you know, I've only raced against him a couple times as well, and we've hit it off so well. So I think we have such a great group of individuals at Thor Sport this year you know, I've been really surprised at how well that we've all gelled for such a short period of time. But I think that goes back to the great culture that we have here and the fact that we all spend time in the shop together. And we've been making so many efforts to build that communication this year compared to, you know, in years past.
Oh, okay, and certainly having your race shop back certainly helps with that effort. A lot of kudos has to go to Thor Sport Racing and the entire organization for everything they've done to make it as easy as possible, I think, for you guys as drivers and the crew chiefs and everybody that was affected by the fire last year. It seems like you guys are off to a really good start this season as well. So I'll tell you what, I really miss not having Sal here. He had some things come up with work, and I've kind of carried all of the questions here. Is there anything that I missed, Ben, that you want to make sure that we cover?
No, I don't believe so. You covered a pretty broad range, so I'm really just happy that you had me on the show and excited for what this season holds.
I'm very excited for you, Ben. I think I'm very encouraged with the first two races of this season. I can't wait to see what happens at Martinsville and the races beyond that. So before you go, let's make sure that race fans know your social media handles, websites, and so forth, how they can follow you.
Absolutely. Everybody out there can go to benroads.com, and that's pretty much your one-stop shop. It's got all of our social media feeds on there, as well as the tags, so that way you can follow us, the Twitter handle, Facebook handle, Instagram handle. That way everybody can find us and follow us along our season and really just our journey across America as we go on this huge adventure. I mean, it's crazy to think of how many stops and places that we go throughout our season.
It really is, and I'll tell you what, I think the Camping World Truck Series, and I've said this a lot of times, has some of the best racing in NASCAR right now. I look forward to those races every week. I'm going to miss you guys for a few weeks here until April 1st when you return back at Martinsville Speedway. But definitely give Ben Rhodes a follow because he's really good at interacting with the fans and keeping everybody up to date. I know you do videos and all kinds of things for the fans. So thanks for all that you do, Ben, because you've been one of NASCAR's most popular drivers, and I know in the Can-Am Pro Series, and you're a Can-Am Pro Series champion as well. So we're looking forward to your 2017 season, Ben.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you all for having me on, and make sure to follow along.
Okay. Take care, and good luck with your sessions in the next few days, and we'll definitely be watching at Martinsville on April 1st.
Thank you very much. Have a great night.
Take care now. All right, folks, that was Ben Rhodes. He's with Thor Sport Racing, his second season with Thor Sport Racing, his second season in the Camping World Truck Series. And I always look forward to talking to Ben Rhodes because he's such an articulate guy. You can ask him just about any question, and he's got great answers and great insight that he's always willing to share with the listeners. So we really appreciate him and Thor Sport Racing for all that they do. We'll look forward to the Camping World Truck Series again. They resume at Martinsville Speedway on April the 1st. Fans, if you have not watched a race in the Camping World Truck Series, you are missing some really great racing. And I'd really encourage fans to watch a Camping World Truck Series race. Check that out because when I say I think it's some of the best racing in NASCAR, I really mean that. It really is. They have exciting racing and a lot of great talent that is coming up through the Camping World Truck Series. Again, my apologies for my voice. I'm having some upper respiratory issues here. And shortness of breath is one of the problems that I do encounter here. We have not heard from Sal at this point. And so with that, I think what I'm going to do is I do have the full audio from Brad Keselowski's post-race comments. It's about a 20-minute segment, just a little more than 20-minute segment. So I'm going to go ahead and play that so I can give my voice a little bit of a rest again. And hopefully by that time we will hear from Sal Sagala. And if he does come on, what I will do is break into that audio and bring him into the queue so we can kind of talk about the racing. But until then, here is the post-race audio from Brad Keselowski's win in the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series on Sunday.
If I can have your attention here in the media center, we are now joined by today's race-winning driver of the 58th annual Folds of Honor Quick Trip 500, and that is none other than Brad Keselowski, driver of the number 2 Auto Trader Ford for Team Penske. Today was Brad's 22nd victory in 271 Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series races, and his first win here at Atlanta Motor Speedway. Brad, You had to overcome a lot of adversity out there today to take home that checkered flag. What was it like to really get your entire team through that process and to overcome that adversity and get your first win of the season?
Well, you know, wins are always special, but early in the season, they're really good. You just can't take any wins for granted. I know I don't. I always feel like before a race, and you obviously always want to win, and you always wonder yourself, you know, when your last win's going to be. And I'm not, you know, anywhere near retirement age, but you still think about those things, and you think about how tough it just is to win at this level and how lucky you are to have a team to win. I mean, a great winning percentage in at this level is 1 out of every 10 races. And, you know, 1 out of every 10 races, if you can pull that off, I mean, you're a Hall of Famer. And I think that's just a testament to how tough it is. So today was a tough day for us. We knew it was going to be a tough day. This is a track that really separates drivers of all sorts and the teams of all sorts. It's early in the season. There's always going to be kind of those pre-race jitters with a track that you know is tough to drive and with rules that are just coming into play with, you know, stages and pit roads. And I think this track, they added a whole bunch of timing lines, and you're just getting back to being comfortable, right? You had the whole off season, so almost like any other sport where you hear about football teams, baseball teams that have those early season penalties and things of those nature, we have those too, and I think you saw some of those today. We had some issues as well, but that's part of the sport, and that's part of everything that's so challenging about it to win and making it special when you do is to overcome those things.
Okay, we're going to open the floor up for questions. We'll get a wireless mic to you. Just raise your hand. We'll start here with Jacob and work our way around the room.
Jacob Steelman, Performance Motorsports Network. Brad, actually learned something that I never realized during the Fox broadcast when they mentioned that you would have enlisted had you not ended up driving race cars. And I'm curious if you wouldn't mind talking just a little bit about kind of that perspective and how sweet it has to be for you to have hoisted the American flag winning the Folds of Honor Quick Trip 500. I know your work with the military all very special to you.
Well, you know, I don't really like to compare what I do to those that are in the military because they've made and continue to make incredible sacrifices and put their life out on the line. But I have a tremendous respect for those that do. You know, that our country is based on those that are willing to make the ultimate sacrifice. I will always have respect for them. I've got a lot of family that either has served or is serving. And wishing them the best along with everyone else. And, you know, you never know in this life and in this career where it's going to take you. And I always wanted to be a racer, but you never knew, at least I never knew if that was going to play out. But I knew I probably wasn't going to be anything normal. And, you know, that was 8 to 5 isn't really for me. So those type of things have always intrigued me, and that would have certainly been a route. But I'm glad to be a race car driver and glad to have the opportunities I have to drive for a team that's world-class, where we can win races year over year and contend like we have here today, and to be able to have these amazing opportunities in my life.
I'm having a hard time seeing back there, but there's a question from the Performance Racing Network.
Jim Noble from PRN and Sirius XM. We only had, I think, one caution for an on-track incident. People thought that if you guys would be right on the edge with this package and the track. Do you ascribe that to conservative driving because the tire situation was so tough, you had to preserve tires? Was it maybe a natural reaction to all the wrecking last weekend at Daytona?
There's just going to be ebbs and flows, and I think sometimes we read too much into that stuff. You know, it seems to me like on the plate tracks, like one out of every four plate races, we get an incident, and or a wreck fest, so to speak, at Daytona, Talladega, and it happened in the 500. It was a wreck fest. Let's call it what it is. And I think a lot of people left that saying, oh, it's because of the stages, or oh, it's because of a smaller restrictor plate, or who knows what. But sometimes that's just part of the ebbs and flows, and I think sometimes we just try to find correlations where there aren't always correlations. I don't really see a correlation today to the stages as far as the lack of yellows. This was a race last year. It didn't hardly have any. At least didn't have any legit yellows. And I think we saw something somewhat similar to that today. But I can tell you that I didn't feel like I was saving my tires. I was driving as hard as I could to make things happen, and a couple times I felt like I overdrove my car. And the guys I was around, I didn't see that out of either.
Go next to Bob, and then to Kyle, and then to Nate.
Bob Parker, ESPN. What'd you think?
You're figuring that out, aren't you?
What'd you think when you heard Harvick had sped on pit road, and where does this one rank as far as maybe, I want to say luck wins, but one where maybe you weren't the dominant car and things fell just incredibly your way the last 15 laps?
You have to put yourself in position. I wouldn't say a lot of things fell our way. I don't know if I would call it that way, Bob, but I would say that, we've had races where we've led a bunch of laps and things fall apart at the end. That's just part of how this sport works. And, you take advantage of the opportunities when they come, and we certainly caught an opportunity, but I don't know if I'd call it a break. I didn't really think much about Kevin or his scenario, because at that time I still had multiple cars I had to pass. And I was just worried about doing the best I could to make the most of our day. So I didn't really think about that stuff or Kevin's misfortune. I thought about what can I do to get up there and have a shot at the best finish possible, and the doors opened up with making passes on the restart and getting by Kyle to do so. So I hate when I lose that way. And it's not fun. And when you win that way, you just take it and you move on. It goes both ways.
Go next to Kyle, then to Nate.
Kyle Magna, theracingexperts.com. Brad, how relieved are you to finally get a win here? You've been so close on so many occasions on the Xfinity truck and also on the Cup side as well.
Yeah, we have been really close here. I think we blew up once while leading here, and that one stung. Woo, 2013, it cost us a making the playoffs, and we were leading the race, and we were going to win it. And I'll never forget that day leaving here for the rest of my life. And that was a perfect example of one of those races that Bob was just asking about, where we were going to dominate the race and win, and something happened. When you win a race like this, that there's been three or four of them where you probably lost like this, and they really suck. But this one is going to feel good, and we're going to enjoy it.
We'll go next to Nate, and then upstairs to the press box.
Nate Ryan, NBC Sports. Brad, I actually have two. Real quick, I wanted to follow on something that Roger said about the camaraderie, as he called it, between Stuart Haas and Team Penske. Obviously, Ford couldn't have started this year any better in terms of the wins column, but he also said that you guys are kind of helping them on the chassis side, and even though obviously you're benchmarking against them, it sounds like there's a lot more maybe collaboration than some of us might have expected.
I haven't been privy to those meetings or arrangements, so I'm not sure what they are, but as long as it means that Fords are winning and winning more often than we did in the last few years, I'm going to enjoy it and pat him on the back and say thank you.
The second one, I promise I was going to ask this before she was in here and sitting next to you, but I noticed you brought Scarlett through the garage this morning, and obviously you brought her in as far as this. Any reason why? Is she just kind of old enough now to enjoy all this?
Having fun, right? It's hard to I don't want to say it's hard. I'm really lucky to be a race car driver. But it's challenging to balance your work life and your professional life. And, I'm no different than most everyone else. I want to have a family, and I want to do all the cool things that you see all the cool things you get to see when you have kids and a wife and all that. But
I also want to win, and you know that means I have to be the best professional possible, and I have to put in hours that aren't always going to be fun, right? So you know, part of that and trying to maximize my work-life balance means trying to find the appropriate times and places to blend the two. And that was my opportunity, and I'm going to always look for those opportunities with my wife and daughter and family in general. And it's part of the challenge of doing what we do, but I'm still really lucky to live this life and to have an opportunity to race for a great team and travel around the country and see all kinds of cool things and meet all kinds of cool people and have fans and all that. But I feel lucky that I have a team that's kind of letting me have some slack with all those things and try to find that right balance, because I'll never forget Roger's son Greg told me, this is one of the first questions he asked me. He said to me one day, he says, how do you balance your work life and your home life? What's your work to life balance? And you know what? For a lot of years, I had a terrible work to life balance with respect to just being all work. But you know, I think in general, I'm the happiest I've ever been, Nate, because I have a better work to life balance than I've ever had. And you know, I get the opportunity to talk to people all the time, whether it be sponsor meetings or gatherings or and all these things, and people ask me that question all the time, and I would say that my time with my family is my time to sharpen the axe. And believe me, when Scarlett wakes up at 7 a.m. And I'm still really tired, I really want to go to work. Yeah, I get some good reminders there of how fun work is. But in general, I just enjoy the time, and I'm the happiest I've ever been in my life, and I feel like I've got the best balance I've ever had, and I feel very fortunate.
We're going to go upstairs for a question in the press box.
Chris Knight, KTrends.com. Brad, congratulations on the win. Looking ahead to Vegas next week, in your first four races, your best finish was 26th. The last four races, you have two wins, going for three wins in the last four races and five straight top 10 finishes. What do you contribute your success there?
You know, we didn't click there the first few years. 2009, we ran okay. I wrecked. My fault. 2010, we ran terrible. 2011, we ran terrible. 2012, we ran okay, and we broke apart. I think we were running second. And finally, we got kind of all that stuff pushed out. And like you said, the last three or four years, 13, 14, 15, 16, have been great for us. So, yeah, it's hard to always put a finger on that, and that's why. And I know I wear you guys out about this, that past success or past failure is not always a guarantee for future success or failure. So hopefully that holds true when we go back to Daytona for the 500, because if you think my record at Vegas is bad, the 500 record, woo. But all you can really do is keep putting in the effort and not let it get you down, and go there with an attitude that you're going to go out there and make the most out of every opportunity to race. And we're going to go to Vegas and think of it as a track we can win at. We have won out that. We'll continue to look at all the tracks that we've struggled at in the past the same way and hope to find that success.
We're going to come back downstairs to Matt, then to Mike, and then to Caleb.
Matt Weaver, AutoWeek.com. SMI and Marcus came out earlier this morning and said that based on fan reaction, driver reaction, they would kind of reassess the decision to resurface Atlanta.
Don't do it.
Yeah, so if they came to you, you say?
Marcus, where are you, bud? Don't do it.
And if they have
We're trying to save you money, Marcus.
And if they have to resurface or repave, how would you assess the recent ones at Kansas and Kentucky, and how would you tell them to go about doing that process?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. And I feel bad for those guys, because all it takes is one race where there's weepers or where the track comes apart and you got red flags and delays, and everybody gets mad at them. So they're really in a no-win spot. And it, you know, we pick on them and tell them don't do it and all these other things. But, you know, at some point you have to trust them to know their business and know their business is racetracks. And drivers hate repaves. We want to see the surfaces last as long as they can. But the reality is nothing lasts forever. And this surface has made it a really, really long time, 20 years, I think, this season. And they should be really proud of that. My hope is they can get another year or two out of it. And I understand if they can't.
and you have to kind of leave it to their expertise and so forth. But, you know, we don't want to see them repave it, but my desire to not see this track get repaved is only superseded by my desire to not see it have an issue where it comes apart or has weepers.
Go next to Mike, then to Caleb, then to Stan.
Mike Embry, USA Today. So many speeding penalties today. What is your approach? Do you try to leave a little comfort zone? Do you try to run right up to the line? How do you work that?
I mean, you don't win when you leave comfort zone in anything, because I can guarantee anybody out there that wants to leave a comfort zone, I'm going to push harder than them. I'm going to beat them. And these guys know that. Everybody knows that. So you got to run right to the limit. Sometimes you're going to go over. I thought a couple times today I might have gone over. I knew it was close. But that's what we do. You know, that's what makes us competitors, is trying to find every limit, every opportunity. The opportunity is at the margin, and it's at the limit.
Caleb Wilson, Speedway Digest.
Good question, Mike.
Earlier in the race, your spotter was telling you that Harvick was like letting off into one at a monumental rate compared to other drivers. How did you change your going into turn one throughout the race after you heard that from your spotter?
I tried a few things, but honestly, I couldn't get my car to work like that, so it didn't really matter for me, and I just tried to keep working on the car, and we got it better the last few runs, and that helped tremendously.
Go next to Stan, then to Kenny.
Okay, Brad. Stan Creekmore with Outside the Box. So the last couple laps, according to your crew chief and your car owner, your right front tire was giving you tremendous trouble today. What were the last couple of laps on that right front tire? How did you keep it out of your mind?
Well, they didn't tell me, which helped. I did have that one time where I figured it out for myself, and I pitted, and I knew not to ask from there, because they'll tell me when I really, really need to know, and if I ask them, it's just going to scare me, and I'm not going to drive it as hard. So, that's really a secret. Sometimes you're better off not seeing.
Go next to Kenny, then to Bob.
Kenny Bruce with NASCAR.com. Brad, I apologize. I was only kind of half listening when you answered the pit road speeding question.
That's okay. I don't listen either. I'll be honest. I only half listen to the questions, too.
All right, well, halfway. Were you in the first pit stall?
No, I listened to yours, Nate. Jeff's I didn't listen to because he hasn't asked one, but...
Were you guys pitted in the first stall?
No, we were pitted in pit stall 43. First one entering, yes.
That's what I mean,
yeah,
first one entering. First one. Okay. Does that make a difference or make it chances of you getting a speeding penalty any greater or not, because you're on one end and you don't have to worry about going in speeding as opposed to...
I don't think so, because you still have to accelerate and deaccelerate to pit road speed with both stalls. So I think it's pretty even. I just like it because I'm getting a little older and it's harder to find that pit box, and it's turning to Mark Martin taught me that one. But I missed a couple of pit stalls last year and I felt bad about it, and so the guys joked around with me and they've started picking pit stalls that are early in, and that's helped my pit road game a bunch.
Go next to Bob and then to Darius.
Bob Parker, ESPN. I have two more. The first is, did you have any thought of arguing with Paul about whether to come in when you had loose lug nuts? There's really not a huge penalty.
No. Bob, when I thought I had a right front coming apart, I pitted, and he didn't second-guess me. And when he told me to pit because there was a lug nut loose, I pitted, and I didn't second-guess him. And I think that's the kind of relationship I hope to maintain with my team.
And in relation to Matt's question, Marcus Smith also told us that the surface is about 3 years beyond what their engineers say it should have lasted. So I'm curious, who's more fortunate, the fact that the track didn't break up, or you with this win today?
the 90s were a great time, Bob. And I don't know what asphalt existed in the 90s, because it sure don't exist today. Because all the tracks that were paved in the 90s have put on our best racing, our most multi-groove usages. And here's what I can tell you. If this track was repaved, I wouldn't have passed Kyle Larson for the win, because the groove would have been too small. It would have been too easy for him to block my air I wouldn't have been able to make it. And that's why drivers love tracks like this, because they open up and they allow us to make moves like I was able to make to win the race. I would not have won this race. I would never have passed Kyle if this track had just been repaved. Now, if you're a Kyle Larson fan, that means you're probably pretty upset the surface lasted. If you're a fan of passes for the lead at the end of a race, you should like tracks like this that have made it and survived as long as they have and opened up to multiple grooves, because I know I do.
We're going to go to your far right, to Darius.
Hey, Brad. Darius Goodman, Henry Herald. Now that we've had two races basically underneath our belt with this new format with the stages, you know, we did the Super Speedway, and then we did here at Atlanta Motor Speedway. Do you think that's what kind of helped you get your car right with the, you know, brakes in the middle instead of seeing the whole entire field get lapped down?
No, I think the biggest thing the stages did is they kept me from getting mad at NASCAR, because you knew there was going to be a yellow, but it doesn't feel bad when there's a yellow and you get points because you're running up front. You just don't get as mad. And you know what the deal is going to be going into the race. It's fair. It's equal. There's no uncertainty about it. It just seems more just to me than it has in the past.
Any additional questions for our race winner? Brad, congratulations on the victory. Good luck in Vegas.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. I listen to everybody. I just wanted you to know that. What's that, huh?
All right. That is the post-race interview with Brad Keselowski after winning the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series at Atlanta Motor Speedway on Sunday. There were some really interesting comments throughout that interview, and I'm glad we were able to play it in its entirety for fans to be able to hear everything that Brad Keselowski had to say. considering that my voice is still giving me a little bit of a hard time, I'm having a little bit of a hard time breathing here, and since Sal has not yet joined us, I am going to go ahead and end the show a little bit early tonight, but I want to make sure I say a big thank you to all of our listeners. I really appreciate you hanging in there with us and tuning in every Monday night for our Fan for Racing NASCAR and Race Talk. We will be back here next Monday night, and that is going to be March the 13th. And again, we start at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm hoping and praying that my voice will be back to its normal routine, and I'll be finished with this upper respiratory condition that I've been dealing with the last 2 weeks. So hang in there with me. Again, I appreciate each and every one of our listeners. Sal, we missed you tonight, but hope to have you back with us next Monday night, March the 13th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Have a great race week, everybody, and we'll talk to you on the other side next Monday night. Good night now.